And on the opposite side of the debate from the millionaire we just heard is the anti-tax Tea Party movement. NPR's Chris Arnold went to Boston for a look back at the original Tea Party and how it compares to the modern one.
I'm standing right on a dock here in Boston Harbor, and this is about the spot, we think, where on December 16th in 1773, the colonists came down dressed up as Native Americans and dumped a bunch of tea in the water. Is that right?
That's pretty much right. They weren't all dressed like Indians, but 50 of them were or so.
I'm actually here with Joe Thorndike, who is a tax historian. There's a lot of fascination with the Tea Party.
Oh, it's so colorful and it's so ridiculous on some level. People dressing up, running on and throwing, you know, crates of tea over the side of the ship. I mean, that's sort of like an attractive little picture we can put in our head.
But when it comes to the modern day Tea Partiers, we wanted to find out to what degree they're carrying on the same ideals as the founding fathers.
I think there are things about the modern Tea Party movement that are similar, but there are a lot of ways in which it's quite different as well.
Thorndike says many people seem to think that the Tea Party was a protest about high taxes. When he says it wasn't, it was about that phrase in fourth grade history books, no taxation without representation. It was the idea of being taxed by a government that they didn't have any say in.
Exactly. What the original Tea Party was really trying to drive home was that the British did not have the right to impose a tax on the colonies because the colonies were not represented in Parliament. That's a very different sort of message than saying, this tax is just too damn high for us. I think the Tea Party today, at least it strikes me, is more about taxes being just too high.
Thorndike heads up the Tax History Project at the nonpartisan and nonprofit group called Tax Analysts. He says, another thing, the original Tea Party in 1773 itself was sparked not just by a tax, but by a government bailout. England was looking to prop up the British East India Company, so it gave the company a tax break that enabled it to undercut colonial tea merchants. And that threatened to put a lot of them out of business.
They wanted to help bail out this company, which was struggling against a big debt load, if that sounds familiar.
Thorndike says that's a similarity to the modern-day Tea Party movement. The bank bailouts got a lot of Tea Party activists upset, and in both cases, people saw the government as favoring big business over the little guy.
It's that sort of favoritism that tends to really grate against people.
So we're looking at setting up the stages on the sidewalk at Charles Street, not here at the bandstand. Okay.
Kristen Varley is the president of the Greater Boston Tea Party. She's meeting with some fellow Tea Party members on Boston Common. They're planning a modern-day demonstration. Varley says a year ago, she was a housewife who decided to get into politics.
You know, was very dissatisfied with bailing out, you know, banks, bailing out auto companies, too big to fail, and kind of thought, you know, as a newcomer to Massachusetts, well, we should definitely be having one of these Tea Party things here because, you know, this is where it all started.
And Varley says she feels a connection to the original Tea Party.
The root of it is that we believe in limited government and personal responsibility and individual liberty. And, you know, I just love America and even Boston. I mean, and I'm from Ohio and I'm like, oh.
It turns out that modern day Boston is just a little too liberal for the local president of the Tea Party movements, even with Boston's history.
Boston is the site of the Tea Party, right? That's where it all started.
I know, but oh God, the politics here just make me itchy. I mean, it's, ugh.
Now, when it comes to taxes, the Obama administration has actually cut taxes for 95% of Americans through a federal income tax credit. Varley says she doesn't believe that, no matter what the government says. And regardless, she says she's worried about what's to come with the rising deficit. Meanwhile, some historians say that the modern Tea Party movement has become enough of a force in politics that it'll probably have its own, at least small mention, in the history books. Chris Arnold, NPR News, Boston.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Steve Inskeep.
And I'm Renee Montaigne. Good morning. It is April 14th, and procrastinators know this. It means you've still got a full day before you need to start doing your taxes.
This year, the federal deficit has fueled debate over how much we should be paying the government, and so has the conservative Tea Party movement, T, of course, standing for taxed enough already.
In a moment, we'll hear about the real Tea Party. We'll start with another part of the debate.
Some wealthy people are lobbying Congress with the message, tax me more. NPR's Yuki Noguchi reports.
Marnie Thompson is, in a way, still trying to make amends for growing up rich.
I knew we were wealthier than most folks because my folks weren't into flaunting it, but they also sent us to private schools. I went to dancing school. To make my mother happy, I was even a debutante.
But Thompson did not want to carry on moneyed traditions, so she gave what would have been her inheritance, $5 million, to charity. Now Thompson doesn't own a cell phone, but she feels she and her husband still have too much.
You want your taxes to be raised currently.
Yeah, absolutely.
And Thompson will likely get her wish. The Bush administration put in place a series of tax cuts that will sunset at the end of the year. That means income taxes will likely increase for those making more than $250,000, though Congress is expected to extend the cuts for households making less than that. The capital gains taxes will also return to their pre-Bush levels. But it's less clear how much of the dividend taxes Congress will reinstate or how estate taxes will be phased back in. If you ask Jeffrey Hollander, all of those cuts should go away because they primarily benefit the richest, like him.
I do feel that I should pay more taxes, absolutely. While I don't like the way the government spends the money I give them, I do feel that I pay too little.
Hollander is co-founder of the Eco Products Company, Seventh Generation. He grew up in New York in a huge Park Avenue apartment, a world with doormen, maids, cooks, and vacation homes. He's in his 50s now, so he was a teenager during the social unrest of the late 1960s.
I felt terribly, terribly guilty about having so much money as a kid.
Hollander even left home as a teen, lived out of his car, and eventually struck it rich with his own business. He says he doesn't believe in trickle-down economics.
These arguments really are about keeping a lot of money in the pockets of people who already have too much money.
It might seem strange that some rich liberals like Thompson and Hollander would campaign to pay more taxes, but they say it's not as weird as it seems. Though there's plenty of evidence to the contrary, they point to a recent Quinnipiac University poll showing nearly two-thirds of wealthy households support raising their own taxes to reduce the government's deficit. In the past, other super-rich people, including Warren Buffett and Bill Gates Sr., father of the Microsoft founder, have championed the pro-tax stance. They said their wealth should be taxed heavily to support the public institutions they say allowed them to succeed. Politicians, though, are most familiar with the argument against taxes. And Marnie Thompson says it's as though elected officials don't know what to do with her letters.
As a wealthy person, I want you to tax me more. And the letters I get back in no way acknowledge that kind of argument.
Obviously, they're entitled to their opinion, and it's certainly refreshing that they're willing to take an opinion that runs contrary to their, you know, short-term personal interest. But that doesn't mean that their position is necessarily right.
Alan Viard is a scholar for the American Enterprise Institute, a conservative think tank. He says taxing the top 2 or 3% of earners won't raise nearly enough to patch up the deficit. Tax increases over a broader swath of the population and spending cuts would be necessary to achieve that. Besides, Viard says, higher taxes for the rich may not be in the overall economic or public best interest.
I don't think it's going to be too big of a surprise if you see some reduction in saving and some reduction in investment.
Jeffrey Hollander, the eco-products millionaire, believes the country faces too many grave social and economic problems not to tap the resources of the rich. That doesn't mean paying taxes is barrels of fun for him.
You know, I can't deny that it is sometimes painful to have to write the check.
But he says he's better equipped to handle the pain than most everyone else. Yuki Noguchi, NPR News, Washington.
To push along the mortgage modification process, the Obama administration has been pressuring banks to reduce not just the interest, but also the principal on many home loans. That idea has gotten a mixed reaction from big banks. From member station WNYC in New York, Ilya Meretz reports.
One institution that's embraced principal reduction is Bank of America. Last month, B of A said 45,000 of its borrowers could qualify to have their mortgage debt reduced by up to 30%. The bank is promoting itself as an institution that's listening and responding to those affected by the mortgage crisis.
We have various different options as far as modifications and repayment plans and forbearances, depending upon the situation and case by case.
That's the voice of a Bank of America loan specialist from an online video. But at a congressional hearing Tuesday, other big banks had a different message. The government could make things worse by trying to make them better. David Lohman is with J.P. Morgan Chase.
Broad-based principal reduction could result in decreased access to credit and higher cost for consumers because lenders will price for principal forgiveness risk.
Translation. If the government tries to browbeat banks into writing down principal, banks will avoid low-income borrowers. Lohman went on to tell the House Financial Services Committee that a broad-based principal reduction program could cost the industry up to $900 billion. For NPR News, I'm Ilya Meretz.
Taxes are commonly referred to as one of life's certainties. You know what the other one is. And tomorrow is when Americans pay their federal income taxes. For many of us, the biggest single tax bill we see is at the bottom of an IRS 1040 form. For many of us, but not for all of us. For many Americans, the Social Security and Medicare taxes take a bigger chunk of their income than the income tax does. And for quite a few Americans, that's a low threshold to clear since they don't pay any federal income tax at all. Robertson Williams is a senior fellow at the Tax Policy Center. He used to work on tax analysis at the Congressional Budget Office. And Mr. Williams' finding has gone viral. So let me ask you now, how many Americans don't pay any federal income tax? And generally speaking, who are those people?
By our estimate, about 47% of Americans will not pay any federal income tax for 2009. The people involved in that tend to be families with children, the elderly, low-income households, those who either have too little income to pay taxes or who benefit enough from all the deductions, credits, and exemptions in the income tax so they're zeroed out on the bottom line or 1040.
And that number, 47%, is up from just a couple of years ago. What's the trend? By how much is it up and why?
Well, in 2007, just 38% of Americans didn't pay tax. It jumped to 49% for 2008 and 47% this year, primarily because of the stimulus bills that we've put in place trying to get the economy going again. In 2008, President Bush's stimulus payments sent $600 to individuals, $1,200 to couples, plus a little bit more if you had kids. And that all showed up as a tax reduction when you filed your income taxes. This year, we have the 2009 stimulus, which includes making work pay. Almost every American who works got benefit from that, and a few other things that bring down tax bills.
Now, let's look at this from the other end. If we take the higher income taxpayers, how much of the income tax do the taxpayers with the highest incomes pay?
Well, if we take a look at people with incomes, say, over $500,000, that's about 1% of all Americans. And the total share of taxes that they pay is about 24%. They have about 16%, 17% of income. They pay about half again that much share of taxes.
And if we looked at, say, the top 20%, the top fifth of all incomes in the U.S., who would that be and how much do they pay?
The top fifth starts a little above $100,000. That group makes about 56% of all income and pay about 70% of all taxes.
So when it comes to the federal income tax, at least, we have a progressive system. The more you make, the more you pay. The less you make, the less you pay. But we pay other taxes, most notably the federal payroll tax. How many Americans pay more in payroll tax, FICA tax, than in income tax?
If you consider both the share paid by the employee and by the employer, which most economists think is borne by the employee, about 75 to 80% of us pay more payroll tax than income tax. Only 13% don't pay either one of the taxes, a far cry from the 47% who get out of the income tax.
And for what percent is there actually a negative income tax? What percent is actually benefiting from, say, the earned income tax credit so that the federal government is giving them money?
We estimate perhaps 40% or more of Americans are getting some money back. That's because we've made a number of the credits refundable. So if it takes your taxes down to zero, it can take it below zero and result in a payment.
Well, Mr. Williams, thank you very much for talking with us about it today.
It's my pleasure.
That's Robertson Williams, senior fellow of the Tax Policy Center. That's a research think tank here in Washington, D.C. He used to work on tax analysis issues at the Congressional Budget Office.